It's quite a resource that we have here in our backyard, Olympic National Park. Last year when I visited, I met folks from Germany, from England, I think. Barb, why don't you tell us about some of the folks who visit the park?
One of the interesting things is that Olympic is a World Heritage Site, and it's a biosphere reserve. Those are both designations of the United Nations, UNESCO. And in many ways, Olympic is better known outside the United States than it is inside. And a tremendous number of people, Europeans, people from Asia, come to Olympic specifically because they are familiar with those places around the world that are World Heritage Sites. And it's similar to the way people here, you know, sometimes want to visit all the national parks just because they know national parks are special. In Europe, people come here because they're kind of going down their list of World Heritage Sites they need to see. And it gets a lot of, it is truly world famous. And if you go to a place like the Ho Rainforest, is very well known. And I, many times throughout the year, get calls from writers, journalists from lots of different countries, dozens of countries throughout the year, and they're very knowledgeable and fascinated with what's here.
What makes it a World Heritage Site?
World Heritage Sites are given that designation because they have relevance and are viewed to be part of the entire global heritage, places that are important to the entire world population, which is really a pretty stunning thought when you think about it. Places like the Taj Mahal is a World Heritage Site. In other places in our country, Independence Hall is a World Heritage Site. The Grand Canyon, Yellowstone, other places, the Great Barrier Reef in Australia. Those places that are so special that they are the birthright of every world citizen.
Excellent. Maybe I should reintroduce you. We're talking with Barb Maines, Public Information Officer, and Dan Pontbriand, Lake District Manager at Olympic National Park in the northwest corner of the continental United States. I'm Paul Nelson. This is not an easy thing for you guys to talk about, but I'd like for you to talk about it a little bit, and that is I was very sheepish when I got out of the search. I was very sorry that people had to put their lives at risk for me, and that was the first thing I said when a radio was lowered down by the helicopter from Jack Hughes. A radio, a blanket, and three MREs. And let me tell you, that corned beef hash was pretty tasty. I really enjoyed that.
You must have been real hungry.
I was pretty hungry. I was, you know, I was working out my food in the best way and stretching it out. You know, I didn't know. I probably could have lasted another 4 days. Thankfully, I didn't have to do that. I thought that when I got back, you guys were going to read me the riot act, going to take me in a room and beat me with sticks. And someone said, no, your brother Andrew wants to do that. But in truth, you folks were relieved that the story had a happy ending, because not all the stories come out this way. In fact, I was reading over some of the information that I either saw on your website or I had from what you sent in preparation for this trip. And there have been some tragedies in the last few years. Can you tell us a little bit about some of those?
Well, we do have some searches that are still open cases in Olympic National Park where we never found the subject. We did not find enough clues. The clues were old and stale, and when we finally did get the report of these people being overdue, either the weather deteriorated the clues to a point where we couldn't find them, or there just wasn't any clues to be found. And sometimes the lack of clues in itself is a clue. It tells us that perhaps the person wasn't in the park, and perhaps we should turn the investigation into a criminal investigation. We do have a lot of cases that are still unsolved in the park, and there's still some people we believe that may be in the park that we haven't found. It's a giant area. It's a huge area, almost 1 million acres in size, and a formidable task to find somebody who may not want to be found, or the clues are so small and so negligible that they're undetectable.
One recent case where you found some remains and had to use dental records to find out who a person was.
That's correct, yeah, up in Hurricane Ridge.
Another case where the helicopter that went to rescue folks or to search for folks actually went down and people died because of that.
1997, that's correct.
Yeah, and people from other parts of the world who end up perishing in the park.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We had a search up in the Ho Valley last year up near Mount Olympus, where the outcome of that search was determined well before we actually found him. He was deceased, and a rather tragic event. We wished we could have found him alive, but that was not the case. By the time we initiated the search, the outcome of the search had already been determined.
So when I was found with no, you know, nothing but bruises and scrapes and cuts, you all were very happy.
We were very happy. Very happy. Very happy for you and your family.
A lot of people called, people in the poetry community, people from the radio station, people who knew me from my, and I have a very enigmatic life and have lots of different little communities, and they all were represented in terms of calling Larry. In fact, Larry Lang, one of the rangers in charge of the whole effort, he was afraid that they were going to actually come down and help in the search and rescue effort, I understand. So that's quite touching. Many folks suggested, well, why didn't you bring a cell phone?
Cell phones don't work very often in the interior of the park. There's not a lot of cell phone coverage on the Olympic Peninsula. Unless you're in very high elevation, in the deep valleys, they just don't work. One of the things that we used on your search, a rather new system for us, is satellite telephones, and they happen to work in the interior of the park. They're expensive, but on search and rescue missions, when life is on the line, we tend to take advantage of every piece of technology we can possibly get our hands on to assist us.
Now, there's the other thought of, if you go into the wilderness to get away from it all and some joker has a cell phone, that's the guy you want to beat with sticks, right?
That's right.
And it really can't be overemphasized that there is there's no substitute for having experience, having good equipment, having a calm, rational thought process when you're in trouble, and knowing how to use a map, just those basics. And having a cell phone, I think, and this has been borne out, not so much at Olympic, but in other parks across the country where you hear about people who really had no idea what the wilderness was about, what kind of terrain they were getting into, but they felt safe. And that's a very false sense of security to rely on the cell phone. As Dan says, most of the park, you can't use it anyway.
A cell phone is not a bailout device. It shouldn't be relied upon to affect your search and rescue.
Well, as Steve Kruger, a reporter at KPLU, who had the misfortune to break the story, he said, this is not a joker who went into the woods with moccasins and jeans. This is a guy who had the gear and knows what he's doing. And I guess maybe we can probably talk about a top 10 list for backcountry visits to Olympic National Park. And I have my top 10 on here gathered from your website and other information. So maybe you can just comment on each one as we go through this. Number one, always pack for cool and wet conditions. Why is that?
Well, certainly in the Olympics, being in a rainforest, we have all the classic elements for hypothermia, even in the summertime. Especially in high elevation. One thing to consider is that every 1,000 feet in elevation that you gain, you lose 3 degrees in temperature. And that's certainly the case out in the Olympic Peninsula. So if it's 50 degrees at sea level and you go up to 6,000 feet, the temperature is going to be much lower at 6,000 feet than it is at sea level. You lose 3 degrees for every 1,000 feet in elevation gain.
Number two, leave an itinerary with friends or family.
And that is so important. There have been cases at Olympic where we didn't have any idea. The person who we were looking for had wanted so much to get into the wilderness and just kind of do their own thing. And I understand that mentality, but it's not a safe thing to do. It's very important, and it worked so much to your benefit that Stephanie knew when to expect you home, knew when you were gonna where you were gonna go, and when that didn't happen, when you didn't return as you had planned, that was the time to get alarmed. And just think if you hadn't told her that. And we might, if you hadn't told her, and who knows, she wouldn't have known where you were, wouldn't have known when to get worried. Clearly, letting her know and always letting somebody at home know where you're going to go and when you're going to come back, it's critical.
Perhaps the most important thing I did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Number three, cotton kills.
Certainly, cotton kills. We really push polypro type clothing and clothing that's near the skin that wicks away moisture rather than holds moisture. And one of the things cotton does is it does dry fast, but that it keeps moisture close to the skin. Not a good idea. You'll get cotton kills because it promotes hypothermia.
Number four, learn how to navigate with a map and compass. This one probably doesn't need a comment on it. Number five, learn how to use an ice axe if you plan on traveling on the snow.
And snow conditions change according to the time of the year and the time of day. The best time to travel in snow conditions is either in the evening or in the early morning. And later in the season, during the climbing season in July, August, and September, perhaps you want to pick a different time to travel. But snow conditions and ice axes is very important to have. If you should slide, if you should not be able to break your fall somehow, an ice axe can be an important thing to do a self-arrest.
I was overlooking Blue Glacier last year, went to Glacier Meadows and did the hike where you're almost on top of it looking down. Those crevasses are deep. I mean, some of the bluest blue, the same color blue of the sky in the middle of those, and that can swallow a person pretty easily.
Yes, it can.
I can imagine. Number six, master mountaineering skills before going on glaciers, for example.
If you're going to go do glacier travel, you should have glacier rescue skills. You should have ropes, and you should have crampons, and you should have an ice axe, and climbing rope, carabiners, and snow picket, and pulleys. Because if you should fall in a crevasse hiking with your friend is going to need to effect a rescue to fish you out of that crevasse. If you're going to be out on glaciers, this is not a solo event. You need to have a team of two or three people to hike with, preferably three.
Number seven, get a wilderness permit for all overnight stays. We talked about this before. This is essential. Number eight, something that many people ask me, well, I bet he has his dog with him. No, not in Olympic National Park. No pets are allowed in the park. Tell us about that.
I'm a dog lover, and I would love to take my dog into the park, but the pet regulations being what they are, the reasons why we don't permit pets in the park is mostly because of wildlife and other visitors. Pets should stay at home.
Number nine, no campfires above 3,500 feet.
The areas above 3,500 feet in the park are very fragile. They have a very slow and short growing season, so vegetation and the impacts of fires don't have a chance to recover quickly, and fire scars remain for many, many years to come. So we prohibit fires above 3,500 feet, and we ask that people carry stoves only, propane or gas.
And number 10, leave no trace. Barry weighs 6 to 8 inches deep and 200 feet from water and campsites. And this was actually one that I really did well with, because the people tracking me said they wished I would have left more of a trace, but I left a pretty clean site in different places.
You did. Yeah, I think the only thing that you left was your footprints back there, and thank goodness we found your footprints and we were able to track them. And but footprints is no trace.
Isn't that what they say? Take only pictures, leave only
footprints.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're just about out of time for this segment. So, any thoughts that you might have in terms of wrapping this up? Some parting thoughts, I guess. Barb, why don't we start with you?
I think that people, especially people who aren't familiar with wilderness areas, it's difficult to understand what a wilderness truly is like if you haven't had that experience before. And so my recommendation, you know, always, and if I'm going to just thinking off the top of my head right now, that, you know, kind of take it in small steps. Get a feel for what a wilderness area truly is like. You know, stay in a car campground the first couple times and then go out, you know, go a mile or two up the trail. And then, you know, sort of take it in steps, because anything you do in the wilderness is going to be done on the terms of the wilderness, not on human terms. And you need to be able to know that and accept that and to work with that.
The wilderness is not for everybody.
No, it's not. So it's good to, you know, kind of take baby steps into it in the beginning and see if it is a place for you.
And maybe a good idea for folks to stop at the Wilderness Information Center if they have any doubts. Is that a good idea?
Absolutely. Get a backcountry permit. And we stress planning. Plan your trip. Plan your hike. And after you've planned your hike, hike your plan.
Excellent. Well, very well done. Again, my most profound thanks for all the work that you did and for the work that you do. The professionalism and the grace of your staff was really almost overwhelming. And I give thanks that there are people like you backing up idiots like me who make some bad choices and almost suffer the consequences in a tragic, fatal way. So thank you very much, and continued success and happiness with your work.
Thank you very much.
Barb Maines, Public Information Officer, and Dan Pontbriand, Lake District Manager of the Olympic National Park.